Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Radio Days and two episodes of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with Bob Bailey. Enjoy.
Now for Johnny Dollar.
Marty Bruce, Johnny, at Worldwide Mutual.
Oh, hi, Marty. How are you?
Did you ever hear of the Mei Ling Buddha?
Nope, I'm afraid I never.
It's probably the most valuable piece of jade there is. A little statue not more than 3.5 inches high. Made during the Mei Ling Dynasty.
And you've insured it?
Yes.
For how much?
$40,000.
So what's happened to it?
I don't know. I don't know if anything's happened to it.
Well, if nothing's happened to it...
I'm not even sure of that.
Huh?
That nothing's happened to it. Come on over here and let's talk about it, huh?
Yeah, I think I'd better.
Bob Bailey. In the exciting adventures of a man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. To the Worldwide Mutual Insurance Company, Home Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Mei Ling Buddha matter. Expense account item one, $1.10 for a taxi from my little apartment to the office of Worldwide Mutual, where Marty wasted no time in getting to the point.
I'd know for sure if it weren't for that knuckle-headed Ray Kermer.
Who's he?
One of our account men. Got back from a European vacation just this morning. For being so stupid, I ought to fire him. He knew we'd insured that jade Buddha. And when he saw it over there in Paris a couple of weeks ago, he should have looked into it. Found out what it was doing there.
Doing just exactly where, Marty?
In a dingy little antique shop, somewhere on the Rue de la something or other. He didn't even have sense enough to get the address or the name of the place.
Oh, where was it supposed to be?
Locked up in the home of the late Daryl Harcourt up in Boston.
And of course it isn't.
Well, that's the point. I don't know. There's been no report of a theft.
Well, if somebody's seen it in Paris... Is that Buddha pretty well known among collectors and so on?
I told you. It's probably the most valuable piece of jade in the whole world.
Then let me use your phone.
Sure, here. But if we don't even know what shop or where it is in all of Paris...
Just leave it to me. My phone call was to a slimy little character whose name is de Marsac, but who calls himself Le Chat Gris, the gray cat, who knows the Paris underworld like the back of his hand. He'd been a lot of help to me some months before in locating a painting that was stolen from my good friend and the actor and art collector Vincent Price.
Certainement, monsieur Dollar. If you are willing to pay me well.
If you can dig up the information I want, I'll mail you a check for $100 American immediately.
Oh, now, Johnny...
$200 for my inestimable services? Oh, monsieur.
Okay, 200. Now listen. There's a little idol, the Mei Ling Buddha.
Yes, I know it well.
Oh?
I saw it only this morning, here in Paris.
Where?
At the shop of Monsieur Dubesson on the Rue des Pas de l'Amour. Yes, he was smuggled in only a few weeks ago.
And the price on it?
Well, for such a rare and exquisite piece, most reasonable.
How much?
Trandu, 32 million francs.
That's around $80,000, so it must be the McCoy.
You wish me to, shall we say, obtain it for you?
You mean steal it?
But of course, monsieur. But for a price.
No, thanks. I'll send you a check.
You're giving him $200 just for that?
A lot cheaper than my flying over there.
Well, yes.
So now I'd better check at the home of this, what'd you say the name is?
Daryl Harcourt in Boston. I'll put down the address for you. Died about 2 years ago. Home's in charge of his old housekeeper, a Mrs. Mary Pascoe.
And I take it his property hasn't been disposed of yet.
His fine old tapestries and furniture, yes, will to various museums here.
Thanks.
Everything but the contents of Mrs. Haskell's room and the study. The latter he willed to a nephew, Charles Curtis, to be given to him the day he finishes at Harvard.
Well, that's a funny sort of arrangement.
Harcourt was a funny man. The Buddha was the only thing of real value in that room. And he figured it was enough to get his nephew started in a business of some kind.
I see. This Curtis boy get the house, too?
No. That goes to Mrs. Haskell after Curtis gets the contents of that one room.
Well, looks as though I'd better hie myself up to Boston and make sure that Buddha's really gone. Item two, the $200 check to my informant in Paris, who was sure he'd seen the mailing Buddha, was sure it had only arrived there recently. But if so, why hadn't it been reported missing from the home of the late Daryl Harcourt up in Boston? Item three, $50 deposited on a rental car. When I reached Boston, I headed west on Beacon Street, a couple of miles beyond Kenmore Square, and there on a little side street found the Harcourt home. It wasn't much of a place anymore. The lawn and garden had been neglected, and the building itself was in need of repair. The doorbell was the old-fashioned kind.
Yes?
Mrs. Haskell, I'm Johnny Dollar, insurance investigator.
Oh, of course. Do come in, Mr. Dollar. Rather dismal, desolate, isn't it?
You live here all the time?
I am responsible for this house until the terms of the will are fully met.
That's when Charles Curtis finishes school.
Yes. Of course, my own quarters at the back are as tidy as they've always been, and Mr. Harcourt's study is exactly as it was when he passed away.
I want to see that study, Mrs. Haskell.
Oh, no, Mr. Dollar. It's to be left as it is until Master Charles opens it to claim his inheritance.
You're talking about the Mailing Buddha.
And the furniture and books and things.
How long since you've seen that little jade idol?
Why, not since Mr. Harcourt died. I locked the door, and it hasn't been opened since, except that
it... Well, I'm sorry, but I have to look around in there.
But, Mr. Dollar...
You have the key?
Of course. I keep it on this chain about my neck at all times.
Let me have it, please.
But, Mr. Dollar...
Listen, I can get a court order if necessary, but it would only waste time.
But how am I to know if you're even... Well, that is...
Here, my credentials. I'm a fully authorized agent of the company that insured that Buddha.
But I'm responsible.
Has it occurred to you, Mrs. Haskell, that the Mailing Buddha might possibly have been stolen?
That's impossible.
Is it? Okay, where's the study?
I'll go with you.
By all means.
And I'll open the door. Here, now.
This door looks a couple of inches thick.
Just like the one to the library where Mr. Harcourt kept all his lovely tapestries. Oh, dear, look at all that dust.
Dust is right. It was on everything. The accumulation of a couple of years. On the desk, the chairs, the oaken floor, bookshelves, and tables. The room was dark and gloomy.
Yes. It looks just the same, except for all this horrible dust. But as I told you, Mr. Dollar, this is the first time the door has been opened.
Yeah. Now, where is the... Oops.
Oh, I hope you didn't hurt yourself.
No, I just didn't see it.
But he always insisted on keeping the electric fan on that little table next to the door.
Yeah. Now, where's the Buddha?
In the little wooden casket on the desk.
Now, let's see. I was afraid of this.
Afraid of what, Mr.? Oh, no. It's gone. The Buddha's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I searched the room thoroughly and found no trace of the Mailing Buddha. Somehow, someone had got in that locked room and stolen it. It must have happened recently. A piece as valuable as that wouldn't be allowed to lie around for long. The Marsak had told me it arrived in Paris only a few weeks ago, and I had no reason to doubt it. How could anyone possibly have got in there without leaving marks in the dust that swirled about our feet every time we moved, that showed a clear imprint of every step we made, that left a mark on everything I touched?
Oh, dear, Mr. Dollar, this is terrible.
You're sure you have the only key to this room, Mrs. Haskell?
Yes, it was entrusted to me to prevent this very thing. Oh, dear.
What about the nephew, Charles Curtis?
No, I'm sure he's never had one.
You think he could have got hold of yours and had a copy made?
No, impossible, Mr. Dollar. Oh, dear.
Where is he?
At school at Harvard.
I think I'd better see that boy.
Well, certainly you can't think that Master Charles did this.
I don't know what to think yet. Tell me, you're absolutely sure you've let no one in here since Mr. Harcourt died?
You can tell by the dust over everything that no one has been in here. Not for years.
You're sure of that?
Absolutely. Well, except for the federal tax man, of course, the appraiser for the estate.
Oh? When was that?
A month or so after Mr. Harcourt passed away.
And yet the piece showed up in Paris only a few...
I was with him, Mr. Dollar, and so was the attorney.
Who is the attorney?
Mr. Howard Bancroft in town.
Do you have his address?
His office is just off Copley Square.
Uh-huh. Then I've got two people to see, Charles Curtis and Howard Bancroft.
Mr. Dollar, about Master Charles. He's a good boy.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
You simply can't think that he... And anyhow, no one could have gotten here without leaving a trail. Mr. Dollar...
Now, look, I want you to close up this room again and leave it closed. I'll be back.
Please, Mr. Dollar, about Charles, listen to me.
Maybe later, Mrs. Haskell.
Later?
Yeah, after I've talked to him. One thing puzzled me. If young Charles Curtis did steal the Buddha, why did he do it? After a few months more at Harvard, he'd get it anyway. And he'd be able to sell it on the legitimate market for a lot more than it would ever bring on the Paris black market. On the way in to look him up, I stopped at the office of the lawyer, Howard Bancroft.
I can't believe it, Mr. Dollar.
Well, the fact remains, Mr. Bancroft, that the Buddha's not only missing from the Harcourt home, but has turned up in Paris.
But the only person who had access to that room was Mrs. Haskell, in accordance with Mr. Harcourt's wishes.
That room hasn't been entered for years, until today. And yet, if the Buddha has shown up only recently...
I'm afraid I don't follow you, sir.
Mr. Harcourt willed it to his nephew, didn't he?
That's right. Charles Curtis, when he finished his school.
And he willed the house to Mrs. Haskell, didn't he?
Yes. And it will be little enough reward for her years of service to him.
How do you mean?
Mr. Harcourt paid her very little during all those years. She, and I too, quite frankly, felt she was entitled to a great deal more. You see, his really valuable things, the collection of tapestries, he willed to various museums.
So I understood.
They were kept in an hermetically sealed room, the library.
Hermetically sealed?
Practically. Didn't you notice the tremendous doors on the study and library, the sealed windows?
Then how could any dust...
What?
About Charles Curtis, Mr. Bancroft.
Admirable young man. In addition to the money his uncle always gave him, well, his own family is very wealthy, you know.
No, I didn't know.
Yes. They've given him everything he wants, and it hasn't spoiled him a bit.
Even during college?
He's an excellent, hard-working student. He's going to be a lawyer, Mr. Dollar, and he'll be a good one.
And maybe my thinking about him has been wrong.
Oh, definitely. Why, Mr. Dollar, he's planned to donate the Mei Ling Buddha to a museum when it comes into his possession. So you see...
It's just that after handling more or less straight insurance cases for so many years, I almost instinctively suspect anyone close to the... well, to the problem at hand. In this case, young Charles Curtis. Even Mrs. Haskell. Maybe even you.
I beg your pardon.
But I guess I'd better just shake the dust out of my brain and tackle this as a plain, ordinary... Wait a minute. Dust.
Eh?
It's a little matter of dust that really has me stopped. It makes it impossible for that room to have been entered since... Tapestries, you said.
I mentioned them.
Of course. How blind can I be?
Eh?
Look, you better get ready for some legal action on behalf of your client, the late Mr. Darrell Harcourt.
What?
I'm going to play a hunch, Mr. Bancroft. Maybe it's all wrong. Maybe it's crazy. But I'm going to play it to the hilt.
No. Mr. Dollar, you can't do this. You have no right.
Now, we'll see about that.
These are my own personal things. I don't believe you're an insurance investigator
please,
at all.
Please, whatever you like.
Have you a warrant to search my room this way? No. No, you're just some thief, some...
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. This bank book in your name.
No. You give me that.
Oh, no. Uh-huh. Some 20 years of a balance that... that never got above $600 or $700.
Give me that.
Here. 2 months ago, a single deposit of $21,000.
That was money that I...
That was the money you got from some crook. We let the police run him down. Some crook who smuggled the mailing Buddha over to Paris after you stole it out of the study.
That's impossible, and you know it. That study hasn't been open for nearly 2 years. You saw the layer of dust in there yourself.
Oh, yes. You pointed it out to me half a dozen times. I should have caught on then. Come on, we're going into that study. Give me the key.
No, I won't.
Then I'll have to rip it off that chain around your neck.
All right. Here. But you saw for yourself.
Yes, I saw it all right. And I didn't have sense enough to realize what kind of dust that was. Here now, look at it. Full as earth.
What are you talking about?
About the old-fashioned method of cleaning fine tapestries with full as earth. That's the way Mr. Harcourt cleaned them, isn't it?
What difference does that make?
And there's probably a supply of it down in the cellar somewhere that he always kept on hand.
What if there is? That doesn't prove anything.
Yeah, I was blind. Blind as a bat when I knocked over this electric fan that didn't have any dust on it. Because it's what you use to spread the dust. The fine particles of Fuller's earth all over this room. A little sackful, maybe, held in front of the fan.
Now, listen.
And it left proof, apparently, that nobody'd been in here for a couple of years. Yeah. It had me fooled, but not anymore. Better get your coat, Mrs. Haskell.
No. No. Mr. Dollar, I deserved far more from Mr. Harcourt for my years of service and of watching him squander his money on the idle tapestries and on that nephew who had money of his own. Now, I have money. Plenty. Plenty, Mr. Dollar. More than I need. I'm an old woman. But you, you're young. Perhaps you could use some of it. Perhaps $10,000 or $12,000.
You'll have to think of a better way out than that, Mrs. Haskell.
Please.
And you know something? I have a notion you're going to have time to think about a lot of things. Plenty of time. Yeah, I know. The Mailing Buddha still has to be brought back from Paris. Maybe I'll get the assignment. Maybe it'll go to one of our regular foreign investigators. As for Mrs. Haskell, well, I'm sure Mr. Bancroft will lose no time in taking whatever steps are necessary. So, expense account total, including mileage on my rental car and a few incidentals, well, call it $300 even. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week? Well, far be it from me to get up on a soapbox, but I hope you'll make a point of listening to it. It concerns a lot of money in the wrong hands. In the hands of a bunch of kids too young to meet responsibility, too young to realize that cutting loose from family before they're ready can lead to trouble. In this case, murder. Yeah, I think you'd better hear it. So join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Paul Dubov, Will Wright, and Horace Lewis. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar.
Well, here I am. I'm home.
Huh? Who,
I said I'm home from my vacation.
Wow, great. Good for you.
Are you going to come over and ask me to marry you?
Oh, it's you.
Who else?
Well, I don't know. How about if I pop the question right now?
Well, go ahead.
Will you marry me, Paula?
You bet your life. Paula?
Who else?
Why, you two-timing... This is Betty Lewis.
Yeah, I know.
Come clean with me, Johnny. Who's Paula?
Oh, now, does it make any difference?
Paula who, Johnny? Johnny?
Oh, Smith, Jones, Brown, you pick one.
You rascal, I could... You were kidding me, weren't you?
Weren't you kidding me?
Yeah, sure, I guess so.
Oh, sure, honey. With this crazy business of mine getting slugged and shot at all the time, why, you know as well as I do, it wouldn't be conducive to a happy married life. Not for either of us.
Yes, I know, honey, but someday...
Yeah, someday.
Anyhow, I'm home again for my extended vacation, so...
So, how about dinner and a show and a big night all around?
I'd love it.
Say 7 o'clock?
Make it 6:30 and I'll have cocktails ready and waiting. Right here at 11325.
Ready, my love, it's a deal.
Good. I'll see you in exactly 7 hours and 31 minutes.
On the nose.
Bye, honey.
Yeah. Well, let's see now. Yeah, honey.
Huh? Don't give me that honey stuff. This is Randy Singer.
Randy, how's the old New York Police Department these days?
Johnny, I gotta see you.
Okay, I'll run on down there first thing in the morning.
No, I mean now, right now.
Oh, well, now, look, Randy, I got a date tonight, important one.
Yeah, and I gotta go out of town with the chief on a murder case, leaving in a couple of hours. Maybe gone a week, maybe longer, so grab a train, will you?
Well, if I can be sure of getting back here by early this evening.
Back there in Hartford is where you should be, as quickly as possible.
Huh?
After I've talked to you. So if this timetable I have means anything, you can grab a train in about 20 minutes.
Well, now listen, Randy,
I'll have the boys in the prowl car pick you up at Grand Central Station.
Listen, will you?
Grab your hat and come on. See you, Johnny.
Randy!
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Are you smoking more now, fun, enjoying it less?
Have a real cigarette, have a Camel.
Are you missing the smoke? The nation likes best.
Have a real cigarette, have a Camel.
Looking for flavor and mildness.
Have a real cigarette, have a Camel.
The best tobacco makes the very best smoke.
Have a real cigarette.
A real cigarette.
A real cigarette, have a Camel.
If you're smoking more today, but enjoying it less, try Camels. More people smoke Camels than any other cigarette. Any filter, any king, any regular. The Camel blend of costly tobaccos has never been equaled for rich flavor and easygoing mildness. The best tobacco makes the best smoke.
Have a real cigarette.
A real cigarette.
A real cigarette. Have a Camel.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Mr. Pat McCracken. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the double identity matter. Pat, you haven't assigned me to this case, but it does concern some of the insurance companies that Universal Adjustment Bureau services. And if there's any question about reimbursing me for whatever charges I may run up, well, read on. Expense account item 1, $4.95, taxi to the station and a train down to New York. As promised, Lieutenant Randy Singer had a prowl car waiting for me at Grand Central, and a few minutes later, I barged into his office in the Homicide Division of the 18th Precinct.
Okay, Conroy, okay. Just go tell the chief I'll be ready to leave by the time he is. Now, go ahead.
Yes, sir, Lieutenant.
Sit down, Johnny. Glad you could make it.
All right. Tell me one thing, Randy. Is this an insurance matter?
It sure is, or rather, they are.
They?
Maybe you weren't called in on them, but, brother, you should have been. Here, look here. Fall 1956. John R.V. Brownfield. Lived in a small apartment over on the east side, but the old boy had a lot of money.
So what happened? Somebody knock him off?
His death was pronounced a suicide, overdose of sleeping pills.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Does it? The insurance company that paid off was Eastern Casualty and Trust.
Oh? How much?
$41,000.
Beneficiary?
His wife. He'd only been married to her a couple of months. And after she collected, well, she just sort of dropped out of sight. Ask me, a lot of those companies of yours pay off too fast.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Listen, September 1957. Franklin P. Ogborn died the same way. Insurance paid to his widow was $30,000. Tri-Mutual Insurance Company.
Well, now, Randy, the mere fact that he also died from an overdose...
Listen, will you? August 1958. Peter William Gerhardt. Same thing. His widow collected $50,000.
Are you trying to say you don't think they were suicides, Randy?
I'd bet my bottom dollar on it.
Why?
Now, here's the last one. Middle of last month. William Earl Chadwick. $25,000 to the widow.
I said, why?
Johnny, in every case, the marriage was only a few weeks old. A good-looking young girl and a wealthy old man. Also, circumstances of death were exactly the same. Exactly.
You investigate them all yourself?
No, they all occurred in different precincts. So until I started digging through these files, until I realized that all these men had been married, and for only a short time, mind you, had all been married to the same girl.
What?
Yes, sir.
You're sure of that?
She used a different name every time, and we have no pictures of her, but Johnny, according to the description by all the people who'd seen her... Johnny, it's one and the same gal.
Okay, Randy, as long as there was insurance paid by some of the companies I work for.
Right. Now, so far, I've been running this down alone, on my own hook, until I could really spot her. So what happens when I finally do locate this dame?
I'll bite. What happens?
She turns up outside my bailiwick. Also, I suddenly got to go out of town for a week, maybe longer. But you, being right there...
Yeah, right where?
Hartford. That's where I've traced her to.
Oh? You know her name?
Sure do. So I'm handing it over to you, Johnny. You've done me a lot of favors over the years, so... Well, maybe you can collect yourself a nice commission.
Oh, what is her name, Randy?
She lives at 11325 East Maple Drive.
11325.
That's right, and she goes by the name of Lewis.
What?
Yep, Betty Lewis. What's the matter, Johnny?
Act two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Are you looking for a career with a lot of bright job opportunities and a chance to be someone? Then by all means, look into professional nursing. Young women between 18 and 35 who are high school graduates in good physical condition can qualify for nurses' training. There are many fascinating outlets for nurses' talents. They can work in hospitals, private homes, doctor's offices, in research, industry, or the armed forces. There's a great need for women to teach nursing, too. Women under 50 are also needed as practical nurses. Practical nurses require less training than professional nurses. They assist in hospitals and perform countless valuable services in private practice. This message is also addressed to men, because there's an increasing number of men going into both professional and practical nursing. So, find out if you can qualify for a nurse's career. Inquire at your nearest hospital or inquire at your nearest school of nursing. And now, Act Two of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar and the Double Identity Matter.
I went over the files on the so-called suicides word for word. I read and reread the descriptions of the widows. They all were the same. No question about it, the same girl had been married to each of the four victims, had been married to each of them only a very short time. Then after death, from an apparent overdose of sleeping pills, she had collected the insurance and quietly dropped out of sight. But Lieutenant Randy Singer, NYPD, had tracked her down and traced her to Hartford. And according to him, according to the description, she was Betty Lewis of 11325 East Maple Drive. Betty Lewis, the girl I knew and palled around with. The girl I had a date with that very night. The one girl in the world I almost took seriously.
What is it, Johnny? You know her? You know this girl?
Yeah. That is, I think I've seen her there in Hartford, Randy.
Good. Then go back there. Get next to her, Johnny. Trip her up. Make her spill the beans about these murders.
Murders?
Well, don't you agree? She must have fed those old codgers all those sleeping pills just to collect their insurance?
Kind of... Looks that way, doesn't it?
What's the matter with you, Johnny? It's as plain as the nose on your face. And boy, how those descriptions of her all tie together.
Yeah.
Height, weight, build, complexion, eyes, everything. Of course, she dyed her hair differently a couple of times.
Blonde.
When she married her last victim, she was a redhead. What'd you say? She's a blonde? She's a blonde now?
Randy.
Yeah?
How'd you get on to her?
It's a long story, Johnny, but somewhere along the line, I got suspicious about those sleeping pills. They were all the same, a special prescription. Are you listening to me, Johnny?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Well, then I found out that not one of those old men had been given a prescription for them. So to make a long story short, I finally ran down a kid working in a drugstore who'd been getting him to her.
I see.
But instead of nabbing him, that would have spread the alarm, you see. Johnny, I got real lucky. In the trash barrel where the kid lives, I found some letters for her, all written within the last month, telling him to start making some more of the stuff for her. In other words, Johnny, as soon as she can trick some other guy into wedding bells, somebody up there in Hartford. But if you can grab her first, pin those four murders on her. Huh?
Hey, Lieutenant.
Yeah, Conroy, what do you want?
That newspaper reporter that was here to see you.
Oh, what newspaper reporter?
I told him you was tied up with Johnny Dollar on that suicide run.
You what?
Well, I seen them files there on your desk.
Conroy, you dope. When the chief and I get back from this trip,
oh, that's another thing, Lieutenant.
Huh?
The chief said if you don't want to start pounding a beat again... Well, you see, he's been waiting out front for you for about 5 minutes.
Conroy, you crazy? Why did you say so? Tell him I'm coming. I'm coming right away.
Yes, sir, I'll tell you.
Johnny, will you take it from here? Down.
Sure, Randy.
Attaboy.
It's truly Johnny Dollar in a moment. Meet star Stuart Irwin.
Nothing's worse for an actor than a nasty cold. To feel better quickly, I take wonderful four-way cold tablets, a fast way to relieve cold distress.
Right. Tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
Take my advice. For your next cold, take four-way cold tablets, the fast way to relieve those cold miseries.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
And now here's a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. To get rid of embarrassing dandruff in 3 minutes, change to Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep unsightly dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair, rub in 1 minute. Add water, lather 1 minute. Then rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch and embarrassing dandruff's gone. At the same time, Fitch can brighten hair up to 35%. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today. And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Hi, Johnny.
Betty, what are you... what are you doing here?
Hey, don't I even get a kiss after being away for a solid month?
Betty, tell me.
And don't you think I'm the one who's entitled to ask the questions? After all, honey, you stood me up. Or did you completely forget about our date for this evening?
Listen, will you?
Much as I hate to admit it, I guess maybe you were right, darling.
Yeah? About what?
No decent kind of a married life, that sort of thing. You wore out on some case, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you know something? I'm just not going to give up on you, Johnny Dollar. One of these days...
Yeah, Betty. Now, listen.
Well, what is it, Johnny? What's the matter?
How did you get in here, Betty?
Well, when you didn't come for me, as you promised, and when you didn't answer the telephone, well, I was afraid something terrible might have happened to you, so I drove on over here to see you. The door was wide open, so I just came on in. I started looking around for you in the den, in the bedroom, and then... Well, that's when you came in.
Betty, your vacation.
Well, it's about time you asked me about that. I missed you while I was away, honey. A whole long month.
I mean, where did you go?
You didn't get all those pretty postcards I sent you? From the Poconos and Atlantic City and New York?
New York. How long in New York?
Oh, a couple of days going, a couple of days coming back.
That's all?
Of course it is. Johnny, whatever's the matter with you?
Your hair, Betty.
What?
What color was it before?
Well, I like that.
What color? Tell me.
You mean to say you think I dye or bleach it or something? You know very well that I... Johnny, what's come over you?
My desk there.
Well, yes, I wondered about that, darling. I hope you're not always that sloppy, leaving things scattered around that way.
All right, Betty, listen.
And do you always leave that window to the fire escape open when you go out?
Window.
To say nothing of leaving the front door open, too.
Hey, Betty, look.
Hmm?
Look, it's been jimmied open. See the marks here.
Well?
Yeah, see, look. Here, where it was pried open. See there?
Well, it's just like my mailbox.
Sure, sure.
You seem almost happy about it.
Well, maybe I am.
Or did you think maybe I had... Only you know darn well I can't even use a can opener properly. Well, now, listen, Johnny, will you please tell me what this is all about? Why are you acting so strangely?
Eddie Lewis.
What? Listen, darling, has all this big mystery anything to do with that newspaper headline I saw? Some kind of a suicide case?
You don't know anything about that.
So that's why you were so late. And Johnny, does it have anything to do with your window being forced open? Your desk being rifled this way?
Yeah, I think so. And maybe you're coming here. Maybe you scared away whoever it was. Wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute. Did you say that your mailbox out at your little house, did you say that thing had been forced open too?
While I was away. I don't know whether anything was taken because I don't usually get much mail, but the tiny lock on it was broken.
You came back yesterday?
Late last night. And then today... Well, you see, the mail's always delivered during the day while I'm at the office.
What time, Betty?
Oh, I don't know. 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, I think.
So what happened today?
Well, you know that rain, that drizzle we had this morning?
Yeah, go on.
Well, I got back from the office and went out to see if there was any mail. Now, you love mysteries, Johnny, so maybe you can solve this.
Go on, Betty, go on.
All right. Well, there in the mud around the mailbox were the marks from those big clodhoppers the mailman always wears.
Well?
And right on top of them were some other footprints. High heels, Johnny.
Of course.
The shoes must have been almost exactly the same size as mine. So, do you suppose maybe somebody else, some woman, has been using my mailbox and my address while I was away?
You bet I do. Betty Lewis.
What?
10 or 11 o'clock, you said.
Oh, you mean the mailman?
That's exactly what I mean. Now, listen, I want a key to your house.
Oh. Will you marry me?
I'm serious, Betty, and tomorrow morning you go to the office as usual.
Don't you mean if I feel up to it after we finish celebrating my homecoming tonight?
That party's going to be tomorrow night.
Tomorrow?
Because I have a sneaking suspicion that by then we're going to have something to really celebrate.
Oh, like what, dear?
The solution of four murders.
Oh, Johnny.
Shortly after Betty left for the office the next morning, I established myself in a little house on East Maple Drive. I parked myself behind the filmy curtains at one of the front windows. Then I waited. At 10:31, the mailman walked up. In addition to a couple of letters, he left a small package in the mailbox. It didn't take much to guess what was in it. I waited some more. An hour. An hour and a half. Did whoever that package was intended for, and I was sure it wasn't Betty, did they know the mailbox was being watched? After all, they knew from the newspapers that I was on the case. But unless they appeared to collect this package, I had no case. Then it suddenly occurred to me, the important thing was to be sure of having that package myself as evidence. So after making sure the street was clear both ways, I slipped out the front door, walked casually out to the mailbox. Aha. Uh-huh. Miss Betty Lewis, 11320.
Huh? Just a minute there, you.
Yes?
Just what do you think you're doing poking around my mailbox that way?
By golly, you do look like her.
What are you talking about?
The real Betty Lewis.
Well, I'm Betty Lewis. Now, if you don't mind, that package you just took out of the mailbox...
Sorry, miss, whatever your name is, but I need it as part of the evidence.
Evidence?
Yeah. That'll pin the murders of four husbands on you.
Johnny Duff.
That's right.
All right. Give me that package.
Oh, put that thing down, lady.
I'll pull the trigger, Johnny, if you don't give me that package. Give it to me.
Okay. Whatever you say.
You dirty...
Maybe you're a lousy shot.
No, you're hurting me. Oh.
Okay, now back in your car.
Now listen, Johnny, listen.
Get in.
Listen, Johnny, I'll make a deal with you.
And you're driving, lady. Right straight to police headquarters. Sure, there's a lot more to be done, only by the police, both in Hartford and down in New York. But there's not much doubt about the outcome, especially since the kid who supplied the drugs broke down and said plenty. The insurance companies, well, the money she had left can be prorated among them, and that'll be that. My problem, of course, will be explaining things to Betty. But you know something? That may have its pleasant aspects, too. So expense account total, well, call it $20. Provided there's also a fee on this one. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment.
Constipation is something people don't talk much about, but it can be a problem for anyone, even doctors. And when constipation occurs, it's interesting to see just what doctors consider important about a laxative they might use or recommend. Now, a majority of the doctors we heard from had this to say. A laxative should be effective, gentle, as close to natural acting as possible, and a medicine that can be used with complete confidence. Well, pleasant-tasting chocolated Ex-Lax is effective. Overnight, it helps you toward your normal regularity. Ex-Lax is gentle. Next morning, it gives you the closest thing to natural action. And that's why many doctors and millions of people use Ex-Lax with complete confidence. Ex-Lax, the laxative that helps you toward your normal regularity gently, overnight.
Is Ex-Lax in your medicine cabinet?
Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, the wildest bunch of crooks I ever tangled with. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Joan Banks, Lillian Baeff, Herb Vigran, and G. Stanley Jones. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Coverley speaking.
Stacks the cards against a jittery gamble in suspense. Next from the CBS Radio Network.
Now for Johnny Dollar.
All right.
Well, hiya, George. I've been wondering when you were going to come up with another wild one for me.
That is not the case this time, John.
John?
Tell me, how is your, have you had a security clearance lately?
Well, sure, in connection with that rocket fuel case I handled.
Good.
But, now, what's this all about?
Well, I can hardly discuss it with you over the phone.
Oh, top secret, huh?
Top secret. And of tremendous importance.
Okay, George. I'll run over and see you.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Have a real cigarette, have a Camel. Are you looking for flavor and mildness? Have a real cigarette, have a Camel. The best tobacco makes the very best smoke. Have a real cigarette, a real cigarette, a real cigarette, have a Camel.
If you're smoking more today, but enjoying it less, try Camels. More people smoke Camels than any other cigarette, any filter, any king, any regular. The Camel blend of costly tobaccos has never been equal for rich flavor and easygoing mildness. The best tobacco makes the best smoke.
Have a real cigarette, a real cigarette, a real cigarette, have a Camel.
And now, Act One of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Floyd's of England, North American Office, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the missing missile matter. When George Reed starts calling me John, well, it must be pretty important. So expense account item one, $1.25 for a taxi over to the square on the office of Floyd's of England.
We'll use this rather isolated office in the back so as not to be disturbed.
Yeah, okay.
Or overheard. Now, if I seem to be somewhat vague about this whole thing, I assure you it's only because of my own rather limited knowledge of... Well, sit down, John.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can hardly expect me to investigate something unless I know what it's all about.
Well, John, out on the West Coast...
Oh, come off this John stuff, will you?
I'm sorry, Johnny. But now listen.
Yeah, shoot.
Out near Los Angeles, in North Hollywood to be exact, is a small plant that operates as the Smithwick Paint Remover Company.
Well, what's so all-fired mysterious about that?
Not one drop of anything even faintly resembling paint remover has ever been put out by them.
Huh?
Actually, that name is only a blind, a cover-up.
Yeah? For what?
An outfit that might better be called the Smithwick Missile Development Company.
Mm. Government stuff, huh?
Johnny, they have no official connection with our government whatsoever.
But unofficially?
That's the sort of question we never ask. So far as anyone knows, our government simply doesn't recognize them, gives them no support, financial or otherwise.
So far as anyone knows.
Which means they receive no protection from Uncle Sam either.
So Floyd's of England writes the insurance?
Precisely. Under orders from our top brass.
Well, what's happened out there? What's the trouble?
Johnny... It appears from what Smithwick told me on the phone that one of their missiles is missing.
Oh, well then. What?
Yes.
Oh, now look, George, I heard of a guy who mislaid a bass drum once and somebody who had an elephant stolen.
Johnny.
One of those missiles? Oh, wait. Hey, maybe he was talking about one that got lost in outer space. But then why send for me?
They have nothing whatsoever to do with the firing of those things.
But don't you... A small plant out there, did you say?
Yes.
Oh, then it simply doesn't make sense. Now, George,
Johnny,
you...
all I know is what Dr. Smithwick told me over the phone. I agreed to have you go out there immediately. He'll be waiting for you there whenever you get there. Well?
Okay, George, whatever you say.
Amigo, you want to know about stereo phonographs? Listen to my last bullfight on ordinary stereo.
Olé.
But now, Columbia Stereo One. Ah, there is a corrida de toros. Real, lifelike, magnífica. There is such a big difference in stereo phonographs. With most, all you get is a couple of speakers shooting in different directions. But with Columbia, hombre, you get fantastic stereo projection. What it does is to send circles of sound sweeping through every inch of a room. You are surrounded with live sound, live feeling, live passion. Olé! Olé! How they cheered me. Ask your Columbia phonograph dealer to demonstrate Stereo One by Columbia. Prices start as low as $39.95 for portables, $129.95 for consoles. El Picador! Who let that bull out?
And now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Missing Missile Matter.
Expense account item two, $8 for a plane to New York. Item three, $176.25 for a 707 to Los Angeles. I arrived about 6 p.m. Pacific time. Item four, $50 deposit on a rental car, and I drove to North Hollywood to the so-called Smithwick Paint Remover Company. As I walked into the reception room at the front, a good-looking blonde hurriedly closed the door in back of her that led to a huge room full of desks and drawing boards, but no people.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my name is Dollar, Johnny Dollar, and I'm here.
Johnny Dollar, the insurance investigator on the my name's Gloria, Johnny. Gloria Snowden.
Miss Snowden?
Well, you just call me Gloria, huh?
Why not? But look, I've come to see Dr. Smithwick. He...
Oh, that's too bad, Johnny. He isn't here.
Is what?
Well, he left very suddenly late this morning for Washington or someplace, I guess.
Oh, now, that's funny. After asking
he
for
asked
me to be...
me to be sure and stay here until you came, and... Gee, I didn't know it was really going to be you, Johnny. He just said Mr. Dollar would be arriving. But anyhow, when he makes these sudden trips, he's always back here first thing in the morning, and I'm sure he wants to see you.
So am I. Funny, though.
What? What, Johnny?
Well, I suppose I'd better get something to eat and find myself a place to sleep.
Oh, gee, I'm hungry, too. And it's all your fault, Johnny, because I had to wait around for you.
Yeah. Well, then the least I can do is take you out to dinner, okay?
Oh, gee, yeah. And I'm free all evening, too, Johnny.
Great. We'll do the town. Now, is there a hotel or a motel around here where I can hang my hat?
Well, gee, I don't... Well, there's a Paradise Motel over on North Sherman Way. It's kind of a smallish place.
On North Sherman Way.
1131.
Then just let me drop off my luggage, shower and shave, and I'll pick you up. Where do you live, Gloria?
Oh, I'll just wait here for you. I have a couple of things I ought to do before I leave.
Okay, whatever you say.
And you don't mind taking me to dinner, I mean?
Are you kidding? All this big emergency, all this hurry. The man who'd sent for me was off somewhere else. I should have asked for directions because it was over half an hour before I finally found the Paradise Motel. It was hardly the place I would have picked, but oh well.
Yeah, here you are, Mr. Dollar, number 7.
Okay.
This be satisfactory?
Yeah, sure.
Because if it ain't, I got other vacancies.
No, this'll be all right.
Anything you want, I'll be in the office.
Well, I could sure use a few ice cubes.
Oh, brought your own jug, huh? Have them for you in the jiffy.
Good. Now, let's see. Shirts will go in here, I guess. That's about the fastest service I ever heard of. Mister, you certainly don't waste any... Hello? Somebody out here looking for...
Of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. Welcome, recording star Mel Torme.
It's terrible trying to sing with a bad cold. So I always take four-way cold tablets to relieve cold miseries fast.
Good idea. Tests of all the leading cold tablets proved four-way fastest acting. Four-way starts in minutes to relieve muscular pains, headache, reduce fever, calm upset stomach, also overcomes irregularity.
When you catch cold, try my way. Take four-way cold tablets. The fast way to relieve cold distress and feel better quickly.
Four-way, only 29 cents.
Now, here's a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. To get rid of embarrassing dandruff in 3 minutes, change to Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo. 3 minutes of Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep unsightly dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair, rub in 1 minute. Add water, lather 1 minute, then rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch and embarrassing dandruff's gone. At the same time, Fitch can brighten hair up to 35%. Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo today. And now, Act Three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Dollar, what was that noise? Well, you've been hurt? Then that was shots I heard. Mr. Dollar?
Whoever fired him was a pretty lousy shot, thank heaven.
Oh, then you're okay? You mean he missed you?
Oh, how do you know that wasn't just a backfire you heard?
Backfire?
Yeah, from some passing car.
Well, don't you tell me that...
Wait, any backfire. Wait. He, did you say?
Well, yeah.
Well, did you see him? Get a look at him.
Well, no. I was in back at the ice machine.
We could have gone into the office to look up my room number.
I heard the noise and that car pulling away, and I just come running.
Yeah, that car must have been waiting around the other side of this motel. Now, look, mister, what'd you say your name is?
Barnwell. Jed Barnwell. And, Mr. Dollar, I'm going to call the police.
No, don't.
Huh? Well, now, I realize you're a special investigator, some kind of...
That's right. And I don't want you to call the police in on this. Not yet.
But now, look...
That's an order.
You got the authority?
Not only that, but... Look, I want to rent another room from you.
Oh, you mean you'll pay for both of them?
That's right. You have another vacancy?
Well, if you want the truth, you're the only guest I got tonight.
I can understand that.
So you take care of whichever unit you want, and I'll sign you into it.
No, just let my name appear on the register for this one. Then you toddle off to bed and forget about me.
Well,
on here. Here's a 5 spot for getting me the key to the one next door, number 8.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Whatever you say, Mr. Dollar. And you still want them ice cubes?
Brother, I sure do. I left one handbag and its contents in number 7. Then I sat quietly in the darkness of my own room and waited. But I suddenly remembered my dinner date with Gloria Snowden, so I jumped into my car and drove back to the missile development plant. The place was dark. I drove to a corner drugstore, to a phone booth, and looked for Gloria's name in the directory. It wasn't. So, back to the motel. In number 7, the room registered to my name. The door was still locked. I went back to number 8 and sat there trying to think this thing out. Huh? I doused the light, pulled my gun out of the holster, and sneaked quietly to one side of the door frame.
Mr. Dollar? Mr. Dollar, I saw your lights go out. I hate to disturb you at this time of night.
Yeah? Who is it?
My name's Bob McKenney.
McKenney?
That's right.
Sounds familiar.
Well, I used to work for CBS Radio, and, I used to handle that program dramatizing your insurance case.
Oh.
I want to talk to you. It's important.
Hi. Come in, Bob. Hey, what's in that box?
It's a tape recorder, kind of a special one. When old Jed Barnwell, he's a kind of a gabby old guy.
Yeah, he sure is.
Well, when he told me you were staying here, well, Johnny, I figured I'd better get to you and tell you about...
About what, Bob?
About some code signals I have here on tape. I picked them up about an hour ago.
Morse code signals?
Yeah, international codes. It's like this, Johnny. I had my own amateur license, W6VFG, and I fooled around with a lot of high-frequency experiments.
So?
Well, I got a couple of wires crossed on my receiver. It took me to a frequency that isn't even supposed to be on the air anywhere.
Yeah?
I started hearing what I thought was a high whistle. It was so high, it was barely audible, like an oscillator note, a continuous squeal. Only it broke off now and then.
Well, now, Bob, in spite of pounding a key myself a long time ago, I'm afraid this is a little outside
my... Wait, Johnny. I've also been experimenting with this tape recorder, running the tape and recording it about 5 feet a second instead of 7.5 inches a second.
Yeah, well,
listen, please.
Okay,
I recorded that squeak, running the tape real fast, and then I played it back slowly. You know what it was, Johnny?
I'll bite.
It was ultra-high-speed transmission, code transmission.
Oh?
And when I played it back as slowly as I could, so I could read it, will you listen to it? I've got a variable speed on this. Can you read international code?
Go ahead, Bob. Turn it on.
Yeah.
Oh, can't you slow it down a bit?
Maybe if I hold it back on the reel.
Wait a minute. Listen to that.
That's what I mean, Johnny. It's legitimate code, all right, only... Well, have you any idea what language that is?
I certainly have.
Well, what?
Whatever that message is. Well, it wasn't intended for anybody this side of the Iron Curtain.
And did you understand just, well, maybe a couple of words?
Yeah. Now, look, have you any way of telling where that signal comes from?
Well, it was mighty powerful, like it was real nearby.
Ultra-high-speed transmission.
And on a frequency that nobody in the world's supposed to be using.
Bob, if there was some way to spot that transmitter, if we could only...
Kenny McManus.
What?
If I can rig that direction finder at Kenny's to my receiver when it's rigged to catch a signal...
Then do it. Get hold of McManus and his direction finder and trace down the source of that signal. Meantime, leave this tape recorder with me. I'm going to round me up an interpreter.
Then you caught those two familiar words in that message.
My name.
That's right, they were. Johnny Dollar.
Act four of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. And now here's a message from the watchmakers of Switzerland.
Swiss vacation, what you like? Swiss vacation.
Win a fabulous vacation for two in beautiful Switzerland. Enter the Swiss Vacation Contest. It's easy. Nothing to buy. Pick up a free entry blank at a jewelry store or other store that sells quality watches. Then in 25 words or less, complete this statement. A quality watch is the best value because there are 1,000 prizes. First prize, a 21-day vacation for two in Switzerland. You fly deluxe Swiss Air both ways. Visit many colorful places. All expenses paid for two people, plus $500 extra spending money. Second, third, and fourth prizes. 15-day Swiss vacations for two. Also, four mink stoles, eight Bolex movie cameras and projectors, 12 Hermes typewriters, 160 $100 watches, 812 gala assortments of Tobler Swiss chocolates. Enter the Swiss Vacation Contest today. Free entry blanks at your jewelry store. And now, Act Four of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Two familiar words and then high-speed code message that Bob McKenney had intercepted. So high-speed it sounded like a continuous squeal. Until we played back the recording slowly and recognized it for what it really was. A secret message in that foreign language. Those two words were my own name, Johnny Dollar. My one good police contact there on the West Coast was Lieutenant Harry Golden of the Homicide Squad. Sure, it was out of his line, it was the middle of the night, but he rounded up Alan Orloff, an interpreter, sent him over to see me. It was nearly 8 a.m. by the time I transcribed the code message. And then when Orloff finished translating it...
Mr. Dollar, do you see what this means?
I certainly do, Orloff.
But not only the threat against you, sir, because you are working on this very case.
I know.
But the sender of this message has somehow got hold of secret plans for a missile, a space rocket.
Orloff
has copied those plans. He's holding them for an agent of this other government to pick them up later on today.
Which means that somehow I've got to locate the sender of that message.
How? And it must be done immediately before the contact with this other agent.
I know.
Then don't you see, Mr. Dollar?
Wait. Yeah? Who is it?
Bob McKenney.
Oh, Bob. Where'd you find out?
Johnny, that secret transmitter's right here in North Hollywood. It's been working ever since I talked with you up until just about an hour ago. Here. Here's the address and the name of the person who owns the house.
Go ahead.
Only the antenna must be set up in the attic or something.
What do you mean?
There's no outside antenna to show there's a transmitter working there. And, of course, using that frequency that nobody would ordinarily be able to pick up. If it hadn't been for my dumb luck in receiving an ultra-high-speed transmission.
Did you record any further messages?
I got them right here on tape, on this recorder.
Good. Then while you transcribe them so Mr. Orloff can translate them, I'm going to the address you have on this... Huh?
Kind of figured the name of that sender might surprise you.
Surprise, huh? That is the understatement of the week. I'm going over to that missile development outfit. And I hope and pray Dr. Smithwick is there now.
So perhaps I was wrong, Mr. Dollar. After all, I'm a scientist, not a file clerk. But I was certain the plans for that missile were missing from the vault just before I was hurriedly called to Washington.
Dr. Smithwick.
Contrary to our usual policy, I asked the government to send some men here to investigate. They'll probably arrive here shortly.
Doctor.
Yet now on my return, I find the plans intact in their proper place.
Oh, those plans were stolen, all right. And for the benefit of one of the big foreign powers.
What? But that could only mean that someone here in this organization...
Right. You mind if I call in your receptionist?
Gloria Snowden.
I want her in on what I have to say.
You mean to say you tell that stupid little girl about this?
You think I need to?
Well, Dollar, it's because of her lack of intelligence that it's safe to have her about.
Any bets? Gloria.
Yes, Johnny?
Come in here, please.
Oh, gee, sure. Hi, Doctor.
Now, Mr. Dollar.
Doctor, Gloria was the only one beside yourself who knew I was out here, who could have arranged or carried out the attack on me last night.
Attack?
More important, she's the last one you'd suspect of being able to gain access to your vault, of taking the plans, having them copied, and preparing to turn them over to a... Well, it sounds corny, but... to a foreign agent.
Are you serious?
Johnny, whatever you mean by that.
However, having intercepted a radio message sent out from a transmitter hidden away in her home... Well, this, Doctor, is a slowed-down, intelligible tape recording of that message.
Well, I don't know what...
Well, Gloria, or whatever your real name is.
Very well, Dollar. And of course, neither of you gentlemen can be allowed to leave this office.
Gloria, that gun.
That's right. Any famous last words, Dollar?
You know, Gloria, this tape recording is the only real evidence I have against you.
What? So what?
So here. Maybe you'd like to have it.
Oh, no, you...
Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, Doctor. And maybe those G-men you sent for will keep the date she made with her contact, the one supposed to pick up those plans from her. The government boys were more than glad to take over, and I hope they can find some way to reward Bob McKinney, who really solved this case. Expense account total, including the trip back to... wait a minute. Forget it. In so good a cause, it was the least I could do. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment.
Thanks for joining us for yours truly, Johnny Dollar, here at 1001 Radio Days. This is your host, John Hagedorn. We always appreciate reviews and shares, so if you have a moment, please do stop and drop us a line. Stay safe out there, and we'll be back soon.